Go ahead. Go back to Carry On My Wayward Son, John.
Carry on my wayward son.
There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't just cry no more. Welcome again to another edition of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornBySports.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy.
Yes, I am.
Yes, you are. And may the Force be with you all. Oh, wait, I should say that in closing. How are you, John?
I'm great.
Good.
So how many times have you seen Star Wars?
As of this podcast, as of the time everybody's listening, 4 times.
4.
And you?
Wow, I've only seen it twice.
Twice is good. Should we ask Devin how many times he's seen it? No, we won't ask Devin how many times he's seen it. We already know the answer to how many times Devin has seen it.
We do?
Yes, John,
we do. Has he not seen it?
No.
What's Star Wars?
Star Wars was this defense plan that Ronald Reagan had in the 80s that Democrats mocked that actually wound up working.
Well, there
but
you
have
it.
That's not important right now.
Star Wars in a nutshell.
I had no idea Alan was so into politics.
For some reason, I thought it was Gerald Ford's failure in the cabinet. I don't know.
I have no idea where that came from.
I don't know either. I just made it up. We were throwing politics in, so I just went somewhere with it.
Hey, George Pataki dropped out.
Who?
That's how I feel about Devin asking what's Star Wars. Who's George Pataki?
He was the governor of New York during 9/11, and why don't I have any more voters?
All right. People don't want to hear us talk about politics, especially when some of us don't know what it is. So, John, we have lots to talk about because we've missed recording the last week we didn't record. It's been 2 weeks. A lot has happened in 2 weeks. Why don't we jump right into it?
Well, first, we know that the Jazz are now going to be without Alec Burks till after the All-Star break, which is just tragic. The Jazz were already having a hard enough time without Rudy Gobert. In fact, the Jazz are 5-10 without Rudy Gobert. And we know it's probably going to be at least a couple more weeks until we get Rudy back. So, you know, the last game they played was Philadelphia, which they squeaked out. And really, at this point, with as many wounded people as they have, any win's a good win.
Are we sure it's going to be All-Star break for Alec Burks? Like, has that been the decision? I mean, have we gotten official word back yet or no?
That's the tweets I've been seeing.
From what I saw, think the original timetable was set at 6 weeks. The All-Star break, I believe, is at 8, is it not?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Is when it first came out, they said minimum 6 weeks. But I think it was Andy Larson who sent something this morning that they were looking at after the All-Star break, or maybe it was Tony Jones. It was one of those guys. But I know I saw that they are not anticipating him back until after the All-Star break.
Yeah, what I saw was from Tony, and that was that he was going to undergo surgery, which they were hoping would accelerate the timetable for his return, which was originally at 6 weeks. But knowing the Jazz, I would guess they stay cautious and bring him back after the All-Star break if he's ready at that time.
And that's the only reason I see why. I mean, I talked to my wife last night about the fibula, about the break, and I mean, she's got some medical background. She's not a doctor, but she works at a doctor's office. I'm not trying to say she is the knowledgeable one here, but she did give me kind of an explanation into the procedure that they would have to do or some things they'd have to do to fix it. And she said, yeah, in essence, surgery would expedite his recovery. However, it depends on the type of surgery they do, and it depends on how bad the break was. And you know, I mean, back to what Devin said, ultimately it comes down to it. If the Jazz feel that they want to keep him out longer and be cautious, then that's what they'll do. And seeing that's been their MO with all of the other injuries they've had, including Alex's past injury, I could see them doing the same thing here, being very cautious and careful.
Yeah. But now that we've talked about them being cautious and careful, what do you think they're going to do with this trade deadline? Do you think this increases or decreases their chance of making a trade?
Honestly, I'm not sure it does anything. I don't think it does either. And my only reason why is, again, goes back to the whole reason why I think they haven't made trades and moves in the last year to this point. Just don't want to make knee-jerk reactions. I mean, are you really concerned about it? The only reason why I see them making this trade is if they want to make the playoffs this year and playoffs are bust, and then, okay, make a trade. But why would you want to do that? That's what I don't understand.
Well, okay, we're going through the process, but when we're missing all our good players, I mean, there's Hayward, and then there's, I mean, who's our second best player? Rodney Hood?
No, he has to be now. He or Booker. I mean, as long as Favors isn't healthy, you'd have to think it's either Hood or Booker.
Or Trey.
Or, you can throw Trey Burke
in the argument there.
Trey. That's right. I forgot Trey. Trey might be. In fact, I would actually put Trey ahead of both Booker and Hood right now, as far as your offensive threat on the team.
Yeah, and he's our second best offensive threat, except his shooting's been bad. So, I don't know. I mean, Favors is questionable for Minnesota, but they really do expect him back at least by the next game. I can't remember who the next game was. But they... Blazers. Yeah. So if he doesn't play against the Timberwolves, I know the Timberwolves are having their own struggles, but I see the Jazz losing that game if they don't have Favors still.
But here's my question, and this is what comes down to in a trade. And this can be asked whether you have injuries or not, but I think this question is more valid now that you have injuries as well. What are you trading for? Are you trading to get a rotational player, or are you trading to get a starter? Because if you're trading to get a starter, then my question is this. Who are you trading, and what do you do with that player who is a starter now when your starters come back?
I think they would make a trade. If they were going to make a trade, I think they would be making a trade for someone who could be a starter, but would still be someone where you would be able to argue, yeah, but this guy's back and you're obviously not as healthy as him. Like, for instance, if they traded for Taj Gibson, they won't, but if they did, it would be that kind of situation where Taj Gibson is good enough to be a starter, but he's also going to recognize that he's not as good a player as Derek Favors. So it would be something like that.
And my next question to you is, who do you trade for Taj Gibson? As we're going to use him as an example. I want to run with this idea. Who is on the trading block on the Jazz? What do you give up to get Taj Gibson?
Booker's your best trading asset to move. He's getting $4 million in his contracts up at the end of this year. And we also have three guys who aren't guaranteed. Now, I think Withy's going to get guaranteed, but Millsap and Johnson are prime salary throw-ins. And the Jazz have a million second-round picks they can do to sweeten deals. And they also have two first-round picks from other teams that may or may not be that great that they could easily throw in for something if they thought they were going to, you know, get a good trade. Personally, I'm not really sure if this makes a trade more or less likely. If the West was up to its usual quality, Jazz would be 11th right now. But, you know, the West is down for the first time in 15 years. So the Jazz are at 8th place, even though they have a losing record. And so, you know, the Jazz can look at the West and go, we might be able to ride this out until Rudy gets back. And then if Rudy gets back and if we go 600 the rest away when that happens, then we're still probably still in the playoffs. I would think their goal would just be to try to get up to the seventh seed. But with all these injuries now, I don't think they can think about that. I think they just got to try to win as many games as possible with this group and just hope they don't fall too deep in the hole by the time they get Rudy back.
And I tend to agree with that statement myself. If I, at the beginning of the season, if you asked me if the Jazz were going to make a trade this year, my answer was going to be no, because I don't believe they will. And I realize that frustrates some diehard Jazz fans, and I'm using air quotes here. I'm just saying it. Diehard Jazz fans who feel like, come on, show us something and make a trade. I have believed all along the Jazz aren't going to do that because I feel like internal development is their number one priority right now, and develop the group that they have and then see where they're at. With that said, this injury still doesn't change my mind. I still don't think the Jazz make a trade. I don't think they're going to, because I still think their mission is the same, and I think they'll continue as is to achieve that goal. So my question to you is, do you feel the same, or do you believe the Jazz should make a trade or would?
I don't think they will. I think they should, but I don't think they will. I think they should anyway before Alec went down. Because right now I'm trying to figure out what the long-term plan is. I think plan A is develop your young talent and hope a couple of them turn out to be all-stars. I think plan B would be more of a hybrid of what Boston did, where you have all these great assets and youth, and you suddenly cash them in for a couple of all-stars, and then you make a run at the championship. They're not quite there, because for Boston to do that, they had to have Paul Pierce as an all-star, and then they were able to get him all-star help
right,
to create a super team. I think Gordon is developing along nicely to be right about there, and then Favors and Gobert. So my feeling has been that they're developing all this talent so they can then turn around and try to get a super quality shooting guard. If Alec or Rodney don't turn out to be borderline all-stars themselves, and trade them in a future first and some things to try to really solidify that spot. And the hope was also that Dante Exum would have had his year. His injury set things back. Rudy's injury hurts our win-loss. So overall, I think the plan is still on course, but the plan is now delayed.
Yes.
I think they were planning on like a 47-35 season, maybe get sixth seed in the playoffs, show everyone we're winners, and then make that big move to get that final piece to be a championship contender.
Right.
All of that's gone when your second, third, fourth, and fifth best player are out.
Here's my one problem with plan B. And I like the fact that you said hybrid, because I think plan A is what you want. Throw in plan A, that hybrid theory where you can bring in another guy. My problem with the plan B, and the example you used, is there's a huge difference between Salt Lake and Boston. And neither, you know, while Boston may not be the prime destination for some players, a marquee free agent or a big name free agent is more likely to play in Boston than they are in Salt Lake City. That's a fact. And that hurts. If you're a Jazz fan, that's got to hurt, because it does. So my concern there is trying to make moves like Boston did when they had Paul Pierce and bring in guys to run for a championship does one thing. Look where Boston's been since that happened. They've gone now how many years without making the playoffs? How many years where they've been not a great team? Granted, they've been in a poor Eastern Conference, but they've still survived and still can. But can Salt Lake survive that type of a same situation?
Here's the point with Boston, though. It wasn't free agents that got him that championship. It was trades. They traded for Kevin Garnett. They traded for Ray Allen.
Right.
And then they managed to win a championship. And they really thought they were going to win more. They were hoping they'd get more. They only managed to get one. But they were contenders for, you know, another 3-4 years maybe.
Yes.
Before they realized, okay, our guys are getting too old now and we're running out of steam. So we're going to go ahead and trade them and get all these assets and start over. And Boston is in an amazing position right now.
They
with
are.
All the picks they have coming their way.
You're right.
They have the power to do it again this year.
You're right. They do. But how many years has it taken them to be out of the playoffs and out of the mix for them to do so? Devin, you're giving me a weird
three.
Look.
They were in the playoffs last year. They got swept by Cleveland. They missed the season before. The year before that, they were in the playoffs against the Knicks. Before that was a deep run where they lost to the Heat. So they've been in the playoffs outside of 1 year, basically every year since 2006, '07.
But that's where I included one asterisk in there. They're in the Eastern Conference. Or they have been for the last 4 or 5 years. What if they were in the West? They wouldn't be in the playoffs any of those years.
Oh, yeah, they would.
You think so?
Absolutely.
After they let Paul Pierce go, after they let...
No.
I'm talking about after Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett. They've made the playoffs without those guys. I'm talking specifically after those guys leave. After Plan B has worked for Dallas or for Boston, they've let those guys go. They have survived and they've made the playoffs in runs since then because they've been in the Eastern Conference. Would they have done so in the West?
Dude, they had like one down year. They had 1 year where they're out of the playoffs when they traded them away, and the very next year they made the playoffs.
But would they have
They were in the East?
Yes.
They're 40-42.
This year.
They're 18-13 right now, and they have a ton of assets that they can make a trade with.
And the other thing you have to look at.
Boston's in great shape. Boston is exactly what you want to do. Get some all-stars, get your NBA rings, see how it goes. If it doesn't work, dump them for 1 year, and then you're back in prime position again. I think everyone would take that.
Well, and the other thing you have to think about, Boston did this with guys that were NBA vets on the, I would say, the downhill slope of their careers.
Yeah.
You're not looking at that with the Jazz. The Jazz could try this. If they can bring someone in and have Favors, Gobert, Hayward, whoever, have them for their 4 prime years in the NBA, easy. And still have the flexibility there to build with new assets, young talent, or to even trade those guys, they'll still have value. You're not going to be looking at a Paul Pierce doesn't really have much left in the tank asset at that point.
When they got those guys, Pierce was 31, Garnett was 32, and Ray was 33.
That's when they got them, right?
When they got there. When they won the title, I mean, they won the first year they got there, and that was their ages. And that's like prime, veteran, savvy, not quite going downhill yet range.
And I would argue they lost the next year because their best defender went down in game 6 and that was the end of it. But, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. They went 62-20 the next year, but then they had that injury.
Yeah.
And then next year, it seems like they... Okay.
My whole
point... Next year, they went to the finals, but they lost in the finals to the Lakers by one game. So they were almost there again.
The next thing I'd throw into that too, the other wrench is if you're going to do that, you have to be able to find a player who is not who fits the mold like those guys did, a player who's going to come in. He doesn't want the spotlight. He doesn't want to necessarily be the guy. He's willing to come in and fit into the system and be that team guy. Because let's face it, all three of those guys prior to joining Boston were the guy on their respective teams. And all three of them took a step back when they were on the court and were willing to let others shine. In fact, I dare say during stretch runs of those years, Rondo might have been the best player on that team. And he was the youngest player on that group. So if you bring in a guy like you're talking about in a Plan B scenario, you almost have to find a guy who's not the tier one elite. I'm going to score 25 to 30 points a night Instead, he's going to be one of those guys like a Tim Duncan that's going to be able to say, I'll play, you know, 30 minutes a night. I'll give you 20 points a night. I'm going to pass a lot. We're going to work this team together, and it's going to be kind of that team concept like Boston had. I like that idea if you can pull that off.
So the Jazz need a Jimmy Butler, not a James Harden.
Ooh, funny you said Jimmy Butler because that's one of the guys I was thinking of. I don't know. That's a possibility, yes. John?
Yeah, the thing with Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen is they were all-stars. They had been up and down in their success, but they were hungry to win, and they were the first ones to come together for a big three, I don't know, in a long time,
right,
probably since Houston. And they came together. They were willing to, you know, be good teammates and help each other, and that's what really inspired LeBron and Bosch to go to Miami and do what Boston did. It's like, hey, let's make a big three here. And I think a lot of vets are willing to look at that. I think if you look at a lot of vets around the league who are like 29, 30, but they've never won a championship, I think they would love an opportunity like that to come along. And there are plenty of vets. And I mean, Kevin Love was putting up great stats in Minnesota, but they were losing every year. And so suddenly he goes to Cleveland, and now he has a chance to win a ring. And, you know, maybe Love's the wrong example because him and LeBron aren't exactly friends. But if they if they win the championship this year, they're all going to be smiles and hugs and in each right. other's selfies.
Right. Well, that got way off topic, but it maybe that was my throw in there tonight because Yeah, I wanted to discuss this because this has come up. I mean, there's a Facebook group I'm a part of where there are people who are vehemently disappointed and angry and frustrated as Jazz fans with the Millers and the organization and the way they've run things over the last few years. And I've defended it profusely, and I did again today. I don't have issues with the way things are going right now. I really don't. I can see a scenario where what you're suggesting is definitely plausible, and I wouldn't be opposed to it. I'm also not opposed to the plan A approach and continuing as is because I think the Jazz are doing just fine with the plan A approach.
Here, I'd like to ask this because, Alan, you were saying Boston has been down for so many years. And let's just say if the Jazz were to go through this process, the Jazz get that trophy, that championship, those rings, would you be willing to get one ring and then have the Jazz really struggle for 10 years following?
No.
Or would you prefer to be a contender maybe a few years and consistently make the playoffs in that, let's say, 7-4 range?
If I can have both, I'd like both. But I don't. I'm not a fan. Simply because I've had to watch, you know, my favorite NFL team do this, but I'm not a fan of winning a championship and then disappearing for 10 years. That's not a sports team to me. That's not something as an organization, a supporter of an organization that I look for. Yeah, I want a championship. Yeah, I'd love to see the Jazz win one. And it takes the right kind of pieces to put together. But I definitely am not in a position where I feel comfortable with, well, we've won a championship. Okay, I'm set for the next decade of my life. Let's go back into less than mediocrity and be nothing. Because that's just not... Yeah.
Okay, John, what about you?
You go for the championship. You have to go about it smart. Because if you're like the Nets, where you went all in for a championship, but you went all in with the wrong pieces, you're screwed and you have no ring. And I think the Jazz are smart enough that they would take that chance to go get that ring, but they wouldn't do it in a way that they would be down for 10 years. And I do think that would be more between plan A and plan B with developing their young guys. But if they have an opportunity to make a Boston move, they'll do it. It sounds like they came close when they could have had Harden way back then.
That's exactly where I was going, and Devin asked it perfect black and white. You answered it with the perfect gray answer. That's exactly where I was going with it. And if the Jazz can pull off the right mix of both plan A and plan B and be the team that wins a championship, but does not drop back into, you know, oblivion for 10 years, but sits back in, you know, consistency as a playoff team, I'd be perfectly fine with that.
See, and I'm with John. I don't want to go for the Nets model of we're all in and then we're completely out of it, because that's just it never works. I can't think of a single instance where you've thrown together a team at the last minute, gone out, won a championship, and everything's been honky-dory since. But I would be willing to watch the Jazz like I've watched the Jazz for the last 5 years, for another 10 years, if they would get a ring in the middle of it.
Well, here, I'll just throw this out there. You're a Broncos fan.
Oh, whatever.
No. You're a Broncos fan. And John's going to laugh, but John's going to...
I'm the opposite of a Broncos fan.
John is understanding where I'm going with this. You're a Broncos fan. When's the last time you won a title? 99, right?
Alan.
No, finish. Let me ask. Okay. Go ahead. Right?
Okay.
Since then, you went into, kind of disappeared into oblivion. Am I right? There wasn't much to cheer about for 10 years. And then what did they do? They took the Nets.
They drafted Tebow. They took,
no.
He was a winner.
No, they took the Nets model based on what we're talking about here. And they went all in and they brought in Peyton Manning. Which, by the way, is for anybody listening, I love Peyton Manning. I always have. But they went all in. They brought in Peyton Manning. Aren't they paying for that now? Come on.
I don't know. You can go check the standings.
Okay.
I would argue an NBA championship is worth more than a Super Bowl championship.
I am not discounting that at all. I'm just using, I may be comparing apples to oranges. I may or may not be, but I'm using a model based on our conversation here to Devin. Devin posed the question. I'm posing it back about another favorite team of his, because I feel like the Denver Broncos are in the same situation, because I think if they can't find a quarterback over the next couple of years, they're on the brink of falling right back into that rut again.
Alan, you know what I don't like?
What?
That almost every time I watch a Jazz game, I see the other team with a gold tag on the back of their jersey.
Gold tag?
Yeah, on the back. Have you not noticed that on the neck?
No.
There's a gold tab right on the neck of the jersey.
What is it?
It's for teams that have won a championship.
Okay, I get it.
Do you know what every game to see that and to see teams that have that? I mean, we're talking terrible teams. Guys, I swear, the Kings have them on their jerseys.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah, because it's been like 50 years.
It was like the Rochester Royals in 1951.
Okay, more than 50 years.
I want a gold tag. I want something up in the rafters. I want to get this monkey off the back of everyone saying the Jazz are never going to win a championship. And to me, that is worth 10 years of suffering. Because we are already suffering.
So you're okay being the next Golden State Warriors. You won in 1975, and then you were the armpit.
We haven't won yet.
They were the...
Here's the thing. It was great to be a Warriors fan in the 70s and the 80s. It's great to be a Broncos fan now, because you know what you can't take away from them? Two Super Bowls right,
all right
there in
fine.
A row.
Stop it, both of you.
We've never had that here.
I am not discounting that. I want to be a champion. My concern is I don't want to pay for it and then ultimately pay the price of never winning it again. Once you win a championship, you always want to win again.
You're worried way too far in advance. I mean, that's never winning it again. That's only the Cubs can think about stuff like that.
Hey, this is good listening. Our listeners are going to have something to go off of here. That's all I'm going with. I mean, you guys have convinced me on a lot of few things tonight. I'm having fun with this, and I hope that the listeners that are listening are having fun with this too. You can attack me if you want to, and it's okay. Please don't attack me, because in the end, we're just really having a good, clean conversation, which is what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to show both sides of a coin here and get some input.
And I completely agree, Alan. I do. But the fact is, you think back to when the Jazz were in the finals that second time, and you think about Sloan, and you think about Stockton, you think about Carl, you think about that group. Would they have given up any playoff wins after that season just to have gotten that one ring?
Probably.
Yes.
Carl sold his soul to go to LA the next year to
that
try
never
and win
happened.
One.
We're not talking about that.
Oh, did I bring up something I shouldn't have? My bad.
But that is what an NBA championship means. And I think that is what is driving everyone so crazy, is that the Jazz aren't even threatening for it now. And we keep saying, be patient, be patient. So I am putting it out there. If the opportunity comes around, bet the farm. Just go all in and make a run at it.
I'll also say this, for all the fans who say the Jazz never pay for anything, let's not forget the Jazz did go into the luxury tax for a while to try and keep Boozer and to put some guys around the Jazz to try and get them to compete at a high level. And it worked for a while. But so for those who don't think that the Millers would overpay, guess what? They did. You know, it didn't work at that time, but they did. Just a thought.
Well, they tried, and then they started slowly letting everyone go.
Well, yeah, because they had to protect the fact that they were overpaying for nothing.
They traded away Ronnie Brewer for a first-round pick because they had Wesley Matthews, and then they didn't try to keep Wesley Matthews, and then it all went downhill from there.
Yeah. I mean, again, business, money, something that we all don't understand at the level we're at. That's why we're not GMs. That's why we're not owners of companies. But, yeah, no, you're right, and there were a lot of changes there. But I just wanted to make that point for everybody who wants to – slam them and say they aren't willing to pay. No, they are, and they have been. So, and that's erroneous going forward, because with NBA, with NBA salaries going where they are, there's money all over the place. So, anyway,
well, I mean, there's only been what, 8 teams that have won in the past 30 years,
right?
So it's really hard to win an NBA championship, and it's so much more valuable. I mean, look at Dallas. Dallas is not near winning a championship right now, probably not in the near future. Dirk's playing great. They're a playoff team, but you know they're not going to win this year, so they're probably going to be going down. But you cannot take away their championship from 4 years ago, and they're going to be able to coast on that for another 5-6 years. I think all Maverick fans would be happy with that. If you ask them all, okay, what if we took away your championship but would guarantee you being in the second round every year for the next 10 years? They'd all say, no, we'll keep our championship, thanks.
Right. Oh, but, you know, the Jazz should sign Deron Williams to come and play with them. Sorry, I'm just...
You know,
no.
that would not have been a bad signing, it turns out.
Sorry, Devin, you're not up to par, but I'm up to par. That's been the Facebook
Devin's
post.
Not up to par.
Well, no, he's not up. He's not caught up with us on this particular
Devin,
thing.
Dragging us down.
No, stop it. It was the bad choice of words. I'm referring to something that you know about that I couldn't remember if I've told Devin about, but my good.
I see it every day.
Yeah,
I see it after
somebody that's
game.
Constantly posting on my timeline after every game. Jazz should have signed Deron Williams. Oh, look at how Deron Williams is doing in Dallas and how the Jazz are doing.
You know what? The Jazz should not have signed Deron Williams because he would look absolutely silly with that haircut without the headband.
That's right. A very good point.
Done and done.
It would have been wrong. So no, that's not happening.
Anyway, it's fine. What's next on our topics tonight, John? What else did you have in mind?
Well, I was looking at the West playoff picture, just to kind of get an idea of what they have coming up. I mean, they have this game against Minnesota. Minnesota has lost 8 of their last 10. That's a very winnable game if Favors is there. If not, then, geez, who knows. Then they got 3 home games. So, I mean, it really comes down to Favors. They need Favors. Any game without Favors, it's just lucky as all get out if they can win it. But they have the 8th seed, and they have the 8th seed securely right now, even though they're 13-16. They have as many losses as the 6th seed Memphis Grizzlies right now. So you can look up that way, or you can look down and you can say they only have one more win than the 12th seed Phoenix Suns. So they're in a precarious place right now, and it's you know, that much more dangerous without Favors.
Yeah.
So when we meet next week, they could be, you know, they could be sniffing seventh place, or they could finally be out of the playoffs. And it's without Favors, it's more likely the latter.
Right. And we're and as we mentioned earlier, the Jazz have to just ride the wave. I don't think any amount of trade or anything you make right now is going to stop this or stop the inevitable from happening right now. You gotta have to ride the wave, and again, you pointed, it's a down year for the West. Ride the wave and let the West beat up on each other until you're able to bring some of your guys back. Like you mentioned, Rudy Gobert comes back. Suddenly that picture may change for the Jazz very, very quickly.
Oh, yeah, I expect it to.
So
it's just a matter of where are we going to be when he comes back.
Right. And can you climb out of that hole if you're that deep? Personally, I don't think the Jazz are going to be that deep in a hole when Rudy comes back. I think they're going to be right there, still on the cusp of that eighth seed.
Well, as long as everyone else in the West keeps losing, they're fine.
Exactly. So you mentioned this other team. You know, you asked me about a topic to talk about tonight, and I have one. You mentioned another team twice, and it brings to topic a conversation here. Phoenix, they're in a world of turmoil right now. They've made coaching changes. And if I'm sniffing anything right now, I'm sniffing a hot seat underneath Hornacek right now.
Well, they fired two of his assistants.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people are kind of like, well, why didn't you just go ahead and fire the head coach too? And I think what they wanted to do was, you know, give promotions to two of those assistants, Earl Watson being one of them. And kind of see if that shakeup will help. They also want to get Markieff Morris back into the fold, and they want him to play ball because they need him to recognize that even if he still wants out of Phoenix, he is sorely hurting his trade value, and it's going to make it that much harder for them to move him unless he helps be a good teammate and contribute again. But yeah, if Phoenix continues down this path, I think Hornacek's a dead man walking. I don't see they haven't extended his contract, so he's a free agent coach at the end of the year anyway. I just don't see him staying there.
Oh, and by the way, if we want to add insult to injury, Bledsoe's been shut down for the year.
Yeah,
that hurts.
Yeah, so it's gonna make it that much harder for him to do anything, and you know. The front office there is just so bad.
Did you see this coming, though? I mean, let's talk. What you even bring up the front office? Let's talk about this for a moment. I mean, that front office has been kind of in a mess for a few years now. Since I don't know, the NBA's Coach of the Year candidate left a few years back, right?
Well, he came in and way overachieved that first year, and they've been worse every year. But their roster's been worse every year, and. I don't know. I haven't heard anything if there was a problem between Goran Dragic and Hornacek, but Dragic just dumped all over the Suns to get him traded. And when they made all those, we had that crazy trade deadline, when the smoke cleared and you look at what Phoenix got, you kind of went, wait a minute, they traded away the Lakers pick? Why did they trade away the Lakers pick?
Right. But see, and that's why I'm going back a few years. Their front office has been a bit of a mess and in some turmoil and problems since Steve Kerr left years ago.
Yeah.
You know, because he represented quite a bit of stability for that front office over, I don't know how many years he was there, but they were winning, they were doing all right, they were making smart moves, and then he left. And since he left, man, they can't get anything right. Every year they've done something, you know, wacky.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm getting at. It's like, I don't understand that. I feel bad for Horny. Did I see this coming? Yeah. I called this a year and a half ago. Like 18 months ago, because it goes back to the fact that I felt like he overachieved the first year he was there. Was that because He's not a good coach. No, I think that was in part to do with a lot of things. I think he had the right kind of roster going on that year and some guys on contract, but he did. He overachieved that first year. And I thought, you know what, things are going to settle. The dust is going to settle and you're going to see this Phoenix team for what it is. And guess what? It's turned out that way. And there's no disrespect. I'm not giving any disrespect to Horny because I love the guy and I do think he's a good coach. He's just in a bad situation. And I called it way back then and it's looking more and more like that's going to happen. So my question is, where's he going to get a job next? Where does he go next?
My guess, and I saw someone say that he'll probably be a very highly sought after college coach, that he might just want to go to the college scene. And, you know, it's a little more low stress in college. Right. You're obeyed a little more in college. The coach is actually the star in college. But I could see him doing that. I could see him taking a head coaching job in college somewhere. I could see a couple NBA teams asking about him, but.
Well, here's a question I'll throw at you. What if another of his former teams came calling after him as a head coach?
Philadelphia?
Yeah. Why not? Drop Brown. You've got an opportunity. Yeah. If you're Hornacek, do you take that job though? I don't know that he does. But is that a possible candidate for Philly?
I think it would be a good job. I think they're already got the plan in place to have Mike D'Antoni be coach next year.
Right.
But it would be a good job. They brought in Jerry Colangelo, which is kind of the signal to the rest of the NBA. Hey, next year we're going to actually try to be a real team again. they'll have whatever picks they have this year. They could have the number one and number four picks. They'll have Ben Simmons and then whoever else we're in love with at number four. Drajan Bender or whoever else, you know, emerges. Dario Saric should come over. That will be a good position next year. And then Colangelo, you know, is going to actually spend money and actually try to turn things around and make it good.
Right.
So, Devin, yeah, I think that'd be a good job next year.
Devin's over here shaking his head at me, though. You're agreeing a little bit with me, but Devin, why not?
Philadelphia has beaten two teams this year, Alan.
And almost a third team.
Let's not speak about what almost happened.
I know. But go ahead. Sorry.
Who are those two teams?
The Lakers.
Mm-hmm. Which has John's favorite head coach in the NBA.
Byron Scott.
And who else?
I forget the other team they beat.
Phoenix.
We don't need you, Hornacek.
All right, then, fine. So you just don't think that's a good fit for him?
I don't see it happening. I mean, okay. It'd be a good opportunity for him. He is a good coach, and if the Jazz had gotten rid of Ty, and you know it had lined up, I would have been happy with Jeff coaching the Jazz, as I think
right
90% of Jazz fans feel. But I don't know. I don't think he deserves to be punished in Philadelphia.
That was what I was asking.
And I don't know if it's a good fit or not. You know, I like John's idea of having him maybe go back to school.
Yeah, and I could see that happening.
And that has worked for some coaches.
Yes, we have
a prime example. Just down the road
in Salt Lake City.
In Salt Lake City,
yep.
of a guy who struggled in the NBA, but is doing pretty well in the college ranks right now.
Valid point. All right. Is that our topics for the night?
Yeah, I wanted to shift to movies.
Let's do it.
I was putting together my worst 10 list of the year.
Okay.
So I'm just going to go over those.
Do it.
And
if you don't have Pixels on that list, something's definitely wrong with you.
Oh, it is. Number 10 is Insurgent.
Okay.
The sequel to Divergent. I never read the book, so I didn't know what to expect. And it wound up just making everything all wrong. The stuff I kind of liked about the first one, it just kind of threw it all away. It was very disappointing. Number nine would be Aloha, which is Cameron Crowe's movie. Bradley Cooper's in Hawaii hanging out. It's never really clear what his motivation is. There's a love triangle with Emma Stone and Rachel McAdams. And the movie just like left a lot of important things out. Like, why should I care? Number eight would be The Lazarus Effect, which was this kind of boring, bland, locked in a room horror movie about a woman who comes back from the dead and she becomes scary and starts killing him. Next would be The Loft, which was about four guys who have this apartment where they take their mistresses to it. And one of them gets killed, and so you have to wonder which one of them did it. It was just kind of a waste. None of the characters were likable. It had Eric Stone Street from Modern Family. He was playing a straight guy, and his whole part seemed to be written on, hey, look, I'm straight. I'm a straight guy. I'm not gay anymore. La, 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 la.
That movie looked like a disaster from its marketing alone.
Yeah. Number six, I have Lost River. It was the directorial debut of Ryan Gosling. I actually just watched it earlier this week. And it was as if he wanted to make a movie that was a cross between David Lynch's Blue Velvet and Nicholas Winding Refn's Only God Forgives, which he starred in. Except no one seemed to be willing to tell him that Only God Forgives was a terrible, terrible movie. And so it had this great cast of people I like, and it didn't have a plot. It was just a lot of mood and images, and I was really disappointed with it. It had some cool visuals, but he really needs to not write his own stuff. Number, let's see, what am I up to? Five, I picked Chappie, about the robot that develops sentience. It's a lot like a Short Circuit remake. But he spends the majority of the movie hanging out with these two slum people who are played by this apparently a semi-popular rap duo from Australia or South Africa. And it was awful. I kept waiting for that robot to get away from those people to move on to do more interesting things. And he stayed with him the rest of the movie. And I was just like, oh, this is awful.
I'm trying to remember, but I don't seem to remember that movie received very many horribly bad reviews.
I thought it did.
Maybe it did. I don't know. I could be mixing it up with another one.
Hugh Jackman was in it. He was the villain.
Right.
He couldn't really do much with it. It was from the director of District 13. And it was just a big disappointment. It made me wonder if District 13 is going to be the only good movie he has. Okay, number four was a movie called Kill Me Three Times. It was an Australian Tarantino ripoff that had Simon Pegg in it. And I say it was a Tarantino ripoff because it had this bass guitar playing through the whole movie that sounds kind of like the surfer movie from Pulp Fiction. It tries to take a bunch of wacky characters and put them in violent situations, but it forgot to be funny. And you could see every move coming several minutes in advance, and it was just a big waste of time. Number three was The Gunman with Sean Penn. A lot of talented actors, but it was just really morose and broody. And it's just so weird to see a guy like Sean Penn playing this army sharpshooter. You know, Sean Penn hates guns, and so why is he trying to do the Liam Neeson thing? Number two is Pixels. Adam Sandler at his laziest. The whole movie was just based on 80s nostalgia and Peter Dinklage saying, "Oh yeah." I mean, that was
the only good part of that movie was the nostalgia, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's what it had going for it. And Adam Sandler at this point is so rich that I think the only reason he makes this movies is to give his friends jobs. And when he does that, everyone involved is just like, just ham it up, do whatever you want, be silly, tell a fart joke.
Well,
and while Sandler himself just sleepwalks through it.
And to those who haven't seen it, don't see it. I will say this one line will tell you why you don't want to see it. Kevin James is the president.
Exactly.
Do I need to say anything more than that?
Exactly.
Kevin James is the president of the United States. People, something is vehemently wrong with that scenario right there. That's even worse than Donald Trump. Oh, never mind. We're not getting into politics. Anyway.
Oh, side note. I watched about the first 20 minutes of The Ridiculous Six on Netflix.
Yeah.
And it's just as stupid and just as broad and just as full of famous people as all the other Sandler movies. It's dumb. I couldn't watch anymore. Okay.
Number one.
My worst movie of 2015 was Get Hard. Will Ferrell and Kevin Hart. I am really tired of male rape jokes. And this movie is full of male rape jokes. I don't know why society thinks it's hilarious for men to get raped. But I've just had enough. I don't know why people think getting raped is funny. Getting raped isn't funny.
No, it's not.
This movie just did it over and over and over again. These are two guys who are funny. These are two guys at the top of their game. And why they wanted to do this script makes no sense to me. It was just, it's like, how could you take Will Ferrell and Kevin Hart and not have anything funny to say?
I'm surprised your list did not include one movie. Maybe it's on your honorable mention list. But Amy Schumer's film.
Trainwreck?
Yeah.
I kind of like Trainwreck.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
Did you see it?
No. But I heard enough people say they didn't like it that it didn't really interest me either.
No, I thought it was funny. LeBron James was funny. I liked Bill Hader in that role. It had a lot of good stuff. It had the best acting part Colin Quinn has ever been given.
Okay.
I know some people were really disappointed with it because it is pretty formulaic.
Right.
They took the formula of a romantic comedy and switched genders, really. So Amy Schumer is, you know, in the guy part. She's the loudmouth who's afraid of commitment. And Bill Hader's in the girl part. He's, like, nice and responsible, and he gets his feelings hurt by her. And
okay. I got
I like it.
All right. Well, there you go. Okay, so your top 10. And I haven't seen a lot of those movies on that list, and most of them I saw marketing on and thought, no, thank you. Insurgent, mm-hmm. I did see. You made some very good statements in there as to why maybe it's different. I mean, for a 15-year-old who's read the books, it's a great film. My daughter has read the books and loves the film. In fact, she's waiting for the next one to come out in March. They kill off the lead in almost every single one of the books. I mean, or the character you've learned to love. So just like that, this next movie, you're likely going to see one of the two leads that we've all come to love in the series die. So that's how the books were written. So, I mean, they're interesting. I haven't read them, but my daughter, both of my girls, both my teenage girls love the books, so, and they both seem to like the movies. So I've been kind of accustomed to enjoy them a little bit.
Well, the plot device I remember that really bugged me is they had this thing where they had put some kind of mind control tracking device into everybody, and they just had to turn it on.
Yes.
Like, why didn't they turn it on in the first movie? Why is this suddenly coming up in the second movie?
They did turn it on in the first movie.
No, there was... Oh, now I'm trying to remember what it was. There was this big thing that they had. The big thing Janine was looking for in the second movie, and she needed to get in the Divergent's heads to find
yes,
it.
Yes, yes.
And it's like, why did none of this come up in the first movie?
Yeah.
You had her.
Right. No, that makes sense. I get you. I can understand that. I don't know. It like I said, I just rewatched Divergent yesterday. So, but no, I follow you. I follow your train of thought there. Makes sense. And I haven't read the books, and so a lot of it has lost me a little bit and has frustrated me. So I can completely understand that. So, All right.
So, yeah, maybe if I'd read the books. Like, I think reading Mockingjay helped me like the movies more than some people might have if
right.
they hadn't read the book.
Right. So, okay, so real quick, give me spur of the moment, your top five movies.
Well, there are a few movies that I'm sure I'm going to love I haven't seen yet, so I haven't really thought about my top 10. But ones I know that will be in there are Beasts of No Nation. It's on Netflix. Very good. Very dark. Very powerful. Mad Max Fury Road. Loved it. Melted my face. Inside Out, which is Pixar's best movie in years.
Hands down.
Thought it was great. Spotlight was really good, about the Boston Globe investigating the Catholic priest sex scandal. Creed is going to be up there. Sicario will be up there. The Martian. Star Wars probably make my top 10. So yeah, that's what I'm looking at. But I haven't seen Hateful Eight yet. I haven't seen The Revenant.
Right.
The Big Short, Carol. There are these other movies that look like they're getting all these award nominations I haven't been able to see yet. So I want to see those before I start to put together a top 10 list.
Devin rolled his eyes at The Revenant. Something tells me that there's a certain cast of characters he's not interested in seeing.
I have not wanted to see a movie as badly as I do to see that one.
Oh, you do want to see Revenant.
I would love to see that
okay.
movie.
Okay. All right.
The cinematography looks amazing. I saw it. I went and saw Joy today. And the preview for that was on, and it just looked spectacular.
How was Joy?
Joy was good. It wasn't great. I'm not going to say it's my favorite movie, but I thought it was a good story. And Jennifer Lawrence, how can you not love every bit of her? She's great.
Yeah.
All right, then. All right.
So, no, it's a good movie. I can see how it would have wide appeal to different people.
Yeah.
You know, you get a group in there and you see Bradley Cooper, you see Jennifer Lawrence, and you kind of feel like the demographic they're looking for is younger, but it was mostly older people in there. So, you know, widening their audience, I think.
All right.
But I enjoyed it.
There you go.
Cool.
I know of a couple of movies that John didn't mention that might make my top list of the year, but that's just me. I enjoyed Ant-Man a great deal. And Age of Ultron was another one that I thought was okay. Not the best that Marvel had to offer, but definitely good. So
yeah, I really liked Ant-Man. I liked it more than Avengers 2.
Yes.
The whole Marvel universe seems to be on the edge of a cliff for me, where they're starting to run together and feel the same.
I gotcha.
And Ant-Man was a little more about character, which was really nice. But I don't know how excited I am for Captain America: Civil War, because it looks like it's just full to the brim of characters and a ton of action. And I don't know how much development's going to actually be in there. And
right.
I'm worried about that kind of, you know, $200 million budget. Destroy buildings. Are you really going to tell me anything new?
Introduce and reintroduce characters. You're bringing Spider-Man back into the fold. So yeah. I mean,
Yeah. That's the stuff I look forward to is Spider-Man going to show up? What's Ant-Man going to do?
Right. Nope. I got you. All right, folks, there you have it. Anything else you want to hit, or was that it?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. Devin, anything else to contribute yourself?
No, I think that's it. Just thank you to the listeners for making this a wonderful year of Jedi and Germs.
Yeah.
All of 2015, yeah. Guys.
Yeah, without a doubt, we wouldn't be here if we didn't enjoy it, and two, if we didn't realize that we had a lot of people that enjoyed listening and taking us along for the ride and talking with us. So this has been a very good year, and this has been it's been a good ride. So, And folks, get at me this week if there are some things you didn't like about on here, but please be kind. I
tell Alan that you won an NBA championship.
No. What's that, John?
I wanted to clarify something. I couldn't remember what it was, so I just looked up my original review of Insurgent.
Yes.
Janine found a box that contains a message from the founders who originally set up their system. The only person who can open it is a Divergent, so she has renewed motivation to capture Trish as if she wasn't motivated before. Why didn't this box come up in part one? Also, at one point, just about every Dauntless is shot with a bug that allows Janine to control their minds, kind of like the serum from part one. Does she use this to find Triss? Sort of, a few days later, in a less effective way than if she'd just turned them all on and commanded them to grab Triss at the first place.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, sorry to break the flow there.
No. No break at all. That
you just
makes
bailed
sense.
Alan out is what you did.
Oh, okay.
No, seriously, thanks, guys, for listening. And, yeah, get at us. I mean, this has been a good conversation tonight. And you know what? I'll let my fandom seep through, but in a lot of ways, I felt like saying a few things tonight, just as much for the discussion's sake of it, because I think, you know, we like to have both sides of the coin, and that's why we enjoy the listeners and the interaction that we have on Twitter with people as well. So please feel free to get at us and talk to us about this, because that's what we have, is we have this open discussion to talk about the Jazz, talk about our thoughts, talk about our, you know, our fandom, and talk about what we want to see going forward. So, Devin, quit giving me that look.
Talk about our feelings.
No, stop it. So anyway, if you can find us on Facebook at Jedi and Germs on the Jazz. You find us on Stitcher and iTunes, Jedi and Germs on the Jazz. Leave us reviews. You know, leave comments. We appreciate that. We'll read them on air. We'll talk about them. Get at us on Twitter at Jedi and Germs, at Jedi Zog, at Torn by Devin, and at Germs Guy. Tag us, mention the show, and talk to us about what your thoughts. As always, thank you. I hope you all had a Merry Christmas and a happy holidays here. We're looking forward to a great new year. Go Jazz. John, take us out.
Carry on, my wayward sons.
There'll be peace when you are done.